Hi and welcome to Attention Please podcast on Talking Stuff Network. We are recording this on 18th August India time. I am Vikram Mohan. We have a mega episode today. Two episodes for the price of one. Great bargain. So make sure your phone is charged and you're seated comfortably or driving in really bad traffic. And of course, we have the bong, not just any bong, but the great bong himself. Welcome back, Arnab.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again. It's great to be back.
So we've got, of course, a big show ahead. So I probably wouldn't want to waste time on small talk. So let's get down to the new segment, which we call This Actually Happened. And of course, we've got two departures, which you want to talk about today.
Yes, we want to talk. But before we go to the meat of the show, I would just like thank. Yes, I would just. So for those of you who don't know or pretending not to know, we have this there's a site called Patreon where we solicit donations per a kind of monthly donation, and many of you have signed up. Again, I would like to stress, because I got an email with respect to this, so I want to be very, very clear. This is not a paid show. All the content is available for everyone, regardless of whether you make a donation or not. But given that we like to follow what happens in the Firang countries on podcasts where loyal fans make a monthly donation, we thought we would at least emulate that model. Again, it serves as a great validation for us, because it just shows that we are being valued. And again, nothing shows value more than money, unfortunately. So I would like to thank all our existing patrons. And we had a patron signing up this week at the why would you even do this level. So a shout out and a big thank you to Soham Pablo Banerjee. And hopefully we'll have the embed code also in our podcast, and I'll be compulsively tweeting about our Patreon page. So once again, if you like this podcast, if you want to support this podcast, you can go there. You know, the minimum donation is $1, so whatever works for you, that's it. So now let's get down. Now that I've finished begging, let's get to the show. So today, in the news section, I want to talk about there was possibly one of the most significant historical figures in post-independent India passed away this week, Shri Atal Bihari Vajpayee. I wrote a post, and I encourage those of you who haven't read the post to go to greatbong.net. Again, this podcast is going to supplement my blog. It's not going to replace it anytime soon. So I whatever I say, it's also written down, at least some of it. So again, for those of you who don't like to read or haven't read my blog or wouldn't want to read my blog but are okay with the podcast, the thing about, and again, it's too soon to evaluate Atal Bihari Vajpayee, you know, his contribution to independent India. It it'll take a person much wiser than me with a lot more research to actually place him in modern India's historical context. So not even going to try to attempt to do that. That's really how I started my blog entry also. For me, the thing about the passing of Atal Bihari Vajpayee is really the end of an era. And the word end of an era is so overused. But in this case, I think it is appropriate to use the phrase end of an era. Because Atal Bihari Vajpayee was a very different kind of politician. He was not unique, but he was possibly the last of those politicians who, if you look at his political philosophy, there was nothing really soft about it. At various points of time, he was always the gentle face of BJP, and Advani was always the harsher face of BJP. But the political ideology that he espoused was, you know, pretty hardcore RSS, pretty hardcore Hindutva at different points of time. And other people with much more moderate agendas have been pilloried by the popular press. But Atal Bihari Vajpayee somehow always avoided. This was by design. He was so likable that even when you did not like his politics or what he stood for, there were very few people who knew him personally who had any kind of negative feeling about him. And this is in sharp contrast to Narendra Modi, who I believe has done, if you look at the number of hardline Hindutva actions that they have taken, would say Vajpayee, and you know, people forget that 2002 did happen under him. It's so, the word Modi is so associated with 2002 that sometimes people forget who was the prime minister then. So given the number of things, including the Graham Staines murder, so many things happened under Vajpayee, but yet you will find even the liberal journalists kind of pining for, oh, how good it was under Atal Bihari Vajpayee. And there's a reason for that. There was a reason was that Atal Bihari Vajpayee was kind of one of the last politicians who made a distinction between you, the person, and you, the politician. And all our journalists are politicians too. So I kind of clubbing them all together. And so, and if you read the articles, they read the obituaries that are coming out about him, you would see that pretty much everyone who interacted with him has the same thing to say, that even when you disagreed with him, he would engage with you. He would be very polite. He would bring mithai, and he would say, okay, we'll always disagree, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't have sweets together. This was, again, a carefully calibrated strategy. I mean, maybe there's a cynic in me, because he always knew that you, in politics, there are no permanent friends and there are no permanent enemies. And over his political life, he ran a number of coalitions. Unlike him, Modi never really had to run a coalition in his life. He always had pretty decent majorities whenever he's ruled. So the contrast, and I've discussed this in a little bit more detail in my blog post, is a contrast between them. It's not just a contrast between people, it's also a contrast between ages. Because I think that politics in India has fundamentally changed. You cannot have an Atal Bihari Vajpayee again in today's day and age. Politics is much more divisive. And social media and the assault of 24/7 private news networks has made it true. So Atal Bihari Vajpayee, and this perhaps is something which I missed in my blog, and I should have. Atal Bihari Vajpayee was a person of Doordarshan days, and then later when essentially Pranoy Roy and his acolytes dominated non-Dur DD news. He never worked in the age of Arnab Goswami. He never worked in the age of really competitive multiple English and Hindi news channels. And he never worked in social media, never worked in the age of social media. And so together with social media and 24/7 cable news, and this is not just in India, it's also, I stay in the US, so this is very much true for the US. You know, Trump has changed the very nature of politics. And that's really what has caught Democrats by surprise. And the newer, younger Democrats who are coming up are trying to emulate Trump in terms of, let's say, the edge of their words. They don't try not to be partisan. They are extremely partisan. They know that they don't want to be likable. The secret of Trump is Trump doesn't even try to be likable, and that's what makes him likable. So Vajpayee comes from this older generation of politician where likability was very important. And Modi, Trump, and politics all around the world, based on social media, has kind of swung to a different pole where likability is a liability. Nobody wants to be likable. People want to have fans. They want to have bhakts. They want to have tards. And they want to have enemies. They want to have trolls. They don't want anybody in the middle because they cannot capitalize on the people in the middle. The center always loses. Moving on to somebody who's perhaps not going to be present in the history books of post-independent India, Ashutosh 83B, or I hope not. So I have been a huge fan of Ashutosh, of formerly of AAP. And many of you have asked me, why don't I review B-grade Bollywood anymore? Because Ashutosh has basically taken its place. Thing about Ashutosh is that I firmly believe that there are two Ashutoshs. One is the guy who tweets, and one is the guy who writes articles for NDTV. Because they're two very, very different. First of all, one guy is pretty good in English, and one guy is the Queen's worst enemy. And Ashutosh, for those of you who don't know, Ashutosh this week announced his surprise resignation from AAP. Of course, there's been speculation as to why he resigned. Some people have said, oh, he just wants to join a news channel. And I'm like, well, why can't he join a news channel and be a part of ARP, given that pretty much everybody else is doing the same thing? I didn't know about Ashish Khaitan. I don't know if you knew that, Vikram, but Ashish Khaitan had also left a few months ago. I just came to know that. So there seems to be an exodus of, you know, I would say early stakeholders of ARP. This happens with any startup where some of the founding members ultimately get disillusioned because they believe they're not getting from the startup what they believe they would be getting based on the sweat equity they put in. So I think that's what's happening to ARP with their Rajya Sabha nominations and the kind of people who are being given prominence. I think Arvind Kejriwal has realized that in this age, and this comes back to the first item, you cannot be Vajpayee and promote a number of political faces in the party. You have to be the only face in the party. You cannot have any kind of brand dilution. If you have brand dilution, the party splits. So Kejriwal is also going the Modi Shah way. He's also going, you know, pretty much the Mamata Banerjee. There will be no other political leader in TMC other than Mamata Banerjee. So I think all of these leaders who kind of joined ARP at a time thinking that they were all first among equals, and they started with, of course, with Yogendra Yadav, are slowly getting disillusioned with the way the party is moving. I believe that the way the party is moving, it's moving towards a model in which it can be more successful. I don't think that in this day and age, you can essentially have an Indian political party which works by committee. And I think this is possibly, I don't know how long Kumar Vishwas also is going to be part of the party, but I don't think he has anything else to go to at this point of time also. So I think this is significant in that way, but I just sincerely hope that Ashutosh does not stop tweeting. Actually, Ashutosh wrote a really, really good article on Vajpayee, for those of you who haven't read it. This is the other Ashutosh. Not the one I love. This is not the Ashutosh I love. This kind of press people, they're all like Gupta ji is there, Ashutosh is there. But the Ashutosh I really love is the guy who, and I sincerely believe that when he made his Twitter handle, the Ashutosh83B was going to be his password. I'm sure that for a certain amount of time, his password was Ashutosh. And, you know, his tweets, his pictures of his spread legs and the television through, watching the television through his spread legs, those are epic. And then his tweet about the correct spelling of responsible. So those are, you know, every time I see that I've seen that tweet so many times, I laugh out loud. I'm going to miss that Ashutosh if he stops tweeting. Or if out of the two Ashutoshes, that's the schizophrenic Ashutosh, the one with the right English wins. That's what I'm really afraid of. In which case, Ashutosh will just become yet another Krantikari journalist. And please, Ashutosh, if you're hearing this, which I'm absolutely sure you're not, please don't change.
But there's a silver lining in the cloud for you, Arnab. So I don't know if you've followed this, but Arvind Kejriwal has not accepted his resignation and said, not in this janam.
Not in this janam. So that again, there might be two Ashutoshes. So that might be for the other Ashutosh. So we don't know. We don't know which of those legs, remember those two legs, which of them is left Ashutosh and which of them is right Ashutosh. And today Ashutosh, I think he tweeted something like, you know, there's a problem with the extreme right and the extreme left, both. Yeah. I mean, both of them are
pretty well.
Like, what's going on with Ashutosh? Why is he talking sense? I'm disappointed. This is the other Ashutosh. I don't like this guy.
I would like to think even Arvind Kejriwal wants his entertainment, so he'll retain the right Ashutosh.
No, I think the fact is, I think Arvind Kejriwal realizes that if two people leave, you can always say, well, there was something wrong with those two people. But if everybody starts leaving and then, how many people are left? It's ultimately people are going to say, well, there's something wrong with ARP. Now, all that Kejriwal has to do is continuously replace, you know, for Ashutosh, there is Mr. Krantikari, who's, I think, also out of a job. So if he can replace them, I think he's okay. But ARP is kind of has to do a little bit of a, you know, juggling a few balls in the air. So they don't want to go down to just two or three people in the party, but they also don't want people with ambition. And Yogendra Yadav definitely was a person with ambition. You can see that from his public pronouncements. I don't think that he would have stayed in this party as just being a vassal to Arvind Kejriwal, which is really what everybody else in the party currently is. He is the boss. And he whatever he says happens.
Anyway, so before we move on to the feature story today, of course, which is Ask Arnab, let's get to the What Song Contest, which we had a lot of entries last week, though not initially. So the song, of course, from last week was from Dil Aashna Hai, and here it is. And the winner, of course, was Ashwin Kumar. And Ashwin, I hope you've received your copy of Mahabharata Murders by now, or it should be reaching you maybe tomorrow. So have a good read on that. And the song for this week. So if you know the song, tweet us, email us at appodcast@talkingstuff.net, or you can message us on our Facebook page, talkingstuff.net, or of course you can reach out to Arnab also. So all the best, and may the best person win. And you'll get a copy of any one of Arnab's books of my choice. So now moving on, we have a birthday to celebrate, upcoming one. So like Arnab said, his yes. blog is turning, how much Arnab?
14 years. So Ramchandra would have come back from Vanvas by this time. It's that long.
That's a long time. So, we had our feature story is people have written in with the hashtag Ask Arnab, and we've got some emails. So, let's not waste further time. So, before we get to the questions, Arnab, do you want to just take a moment and talking about how you started out on the blog and how it's evolved over the years?
Sure. So, on August 20th, 2004, and there was really nothing significant about this day at all. So, what had happened was I had graduated from Stony Brook with my PhD in computer science. I used to stay in a shared apartment with five other Indians in a very small apartment. And there all of us were doing our PhD. And pretty much every night, you know, Fridays like this or Saturday night, we would sit around, not always drinking. We didn't drink a lot. You know, we were high without drinking. And we would just obsessively argue about everything. And since there was no social media in those days, and I'm talking about 2001, everything we said, there is no record of us having said it, which is good. I would not like to have what I said in those days recorded or screenshotted. So we would all sit together and kind of argue about different things, you know, which language is the best, you know, definitely liberalism versus Hindutva, everything that we talk on the blog, cricket, movies. And then once I got my PhD, I moved to Detroit, where I was working for General Motors. And I was suddenly kind of cut from my roots. I really had a great time in Stony Brook, and I was staying alone. It's an extremely cold and bitingly cold place. It's right next to Lake Michigan. And I was staying in a place which was, let's say, you know, not safe. Let me just put it like that. So it was not a great locality that I used to stay in. It was my first job. I was trying to save money. I had a car whose muffler was broken. So when I drove it around, it made a sound like a bike. So I didn't even, you know, take it out. So I used to stay at home for, you know, extended periods of time. And it was then, just before that, what happened was Sulekha had a competition, a short story competition. So I had sent in one of my entries. And there was going to be a winnowing out of entries, and there was going to be a second round. And I found out that my short story hadn't even made the cut, even hadn't made the first cut. It still hurts because I looked at the other stories, and, you know, I'm not saying this because I wrote the story, but I was pretty sure my story was much better than many of the stories that made the first cut. So at that point of time, I decided that I have had it. I've had it with rejections. I will not send, and I've done this for years before, by the way, sending my written material to people, hoping that it gets published. That I will not do this anymore. There will be a place where I will just write, and that's it. If people want to read, they'll come and read it. If they don't, they will never. That's when I started the blog. It was Blogger. I didn't even know what it was. I regret having chosen the name Great Bomb. The reason why I chose Great Bomb, and I've said this before, but for those of you who don't know, one of my friends, he was one of my best friends in Stony Brook, used to stay with me in the apartment. So we used to play Jeopardy together online. So we had a common login and common password. So he chose the login Great Bomb as a kind of a hat tip to me, because I always used to say that Bengalis are great. So when I was choosing some kind of ID, that name came to me because it was a login I used to use a lot for playing Jeopardy. So I took that. There was no other reason. Honestly, I did not know at that point of time what bong meant in America. And from that time on, I've always had a problem, whether it be registering my website, whether it has been a Facebook page. The word bong and the word great together has always been associated with drug paraphernalia. So if I could go back and change one thing, I would not have written under the moniker Great Bong. I would have chosen something else. Perhaps even written under my real name. There was no real reason why I didn't write under my real name at that point of time. So again, that's how it started. For about a year or so, nobody read my blog. And then I think I wouldn't use the word viral in pre-social media days, but one of the first blog posts that got some amount of popular traction was something which I wrote about, I think, Jadavpur University girls. Now, in these days, I wouldn't even dare to write that blog post, by the way. These were kinder, gentler times, let's say. And there were not too many people reading it. Then I had written a post about Desi Baba, which was an Indian porn site, which I used to be or my friend used to be a regular visitor of. So I had written Desi Baba closed down. So I had written a blog post called A Passing of a Friend, a kind of a mock orbit written for a porn site. And that got covered in the Telegraph, which led to then an embarrassing call from my parents, my mother saying, your name is in Telegraph today. It's about some site called Desi Baba. So yeah, that was a little embarrassing. And then I remember I had written this post on Mithun Chakravarti called Mithunism, a Religion. I had written this blog post and I had gone to Austria for a conference. So I didn't have a laptop then. So the hotel had this desktop. This is 2004, I think, or 2005, January or something. Those days, I've forgotten. So I went there. I went to the hotel computer just to check, has anybody commented on my blog? Oh my goodness, there were like 72 comments or something. I couldn't believe it. Have I been spammed like this? What's going on? And they were like, that was the first time. And I would say the Mithunism was really viral, even by today's standard. And then I kind of, the blog never, I would like to say never looked back, but but it's kind of had its ebbs and flows. And right now it's kind of on the way down because I think blogs, nobody really reads blogs anymore. And also, since I'm the only person who blogs at Great Bong, it's not a group blog. It's also evolved as I have grown older and as really my time has shrunk because I've started writing books. I have a daughter now. I have increased responsibilities at work. So it's kind of shrunk. So combined with the fact that there is not a lot of, I would say, demand for long-form blog posts any longer, and that people mostly like Twitter or like really, really very short, anything which would fit into a short attention span, both from a demand and both from a supply side, the blog is kind of, I would hesitate to use the word dying out on his birthday, but effectively that. So I write infrequently. But I still write when I feel the need to write. There was a time in which I would obsessively write every few days. Even if I felt that, there was really nothing to write about, I would make something, I would create a topic and write about. That's something which I no longer do. I only write when I'm absolutely forced, I have to write it. Okay, then only I write. And I think that's also, it's also increased the quality of the posts also, because I write less, it's better.
That's a somber note for a birthday message. Let's get to the questions, because we've got quite a few of them. I'll start. So the first one, of course, these are a little serious in keeping with the tone of your birthday message too. So I'm reading out the first one. It says, over the years, we have seen you slowly and steadily sort of distancing yourself from your steadfast loyalty and love for the subaltern culture. Is this a conscious move triggered by the birth of your daughter?
No, not really. The fact is, so when I started out, I was a huge fan of Bollywood B movies. This was something which was a fascination of mine from undergrad. So the reason why also, there's a personal story behind this, because I grew up in a Bengali middle class family where anything which was a Hindi movie was considered to be bad culture. So you would expect it to like listen to Ravindra Sangeet. And everything had to be Ravindra or Sharath or Bankim. Or you could read Charles Dickens, Tolstoy. But Mithun Chakravarty was really the thin end of the wedge. And so this was my way of rebelling against what I believe to be obsessive cultural Nazism of a middle-class Bengali upbringing. So the more I felt that pressure, the more I gravitated to Kasam Paida Karne Wale. Over the years, of course, once I became older, the rebellion part was no longer made sense. I was now myself a dad. Who am I rebelling against? So the rebellion part kind of went away. And firstly, I don't have time. I do enjoy bad movies, but not as much as I used to. There's also a thing that there is a lot of people who are writing about it now. There are like younger people with a lot more time who are spending a lot more time looking at, analyzing. And my thing is, I'm more a text guy. I like writing about things. And this kind of made sense when it was difficult to get video. So nowadays, why would I write about a bad movie? Somebody will just take a YouTube video clip and put it on a Facebook page, right? And or they would do a video review of it. That's a much better way of, and a more impactful way of looking at B-grade movies. Text, you lose a lot. And so you're kind of dependent on the humor in the text. And that's fun. And that's, I would say, much more artistic. But it's not so impactful. So if I had started blogging right now, maybe I wouldn't even have gone down that road. I went down that road because there was no video. I couldn't show things. And the only way I could make you laugh about B-grade movies was me writing about it in a funny way. There's also another thing that I've noticed is that we've kind of moved to a more politically correct times. And many of the things that was there in the golden age of Shakti Kapoor and wet saris and everything, nowadays, if you mention them, there's a backlash always. And I'm kind of always afraid of the backlash. And people might say, well, you deserve the backlash. This is the way things should be. And I'm not even getting into that. But I would just prefer not to go there at this point of time, given the kind of, let's say, everyday outrage that social media seems to subsist on. When I started out blogging, things went like this. I just feel it's just, given everything, it's just no longer worth it. I prefer to spend my time writing fiction, honestly.
Okay, the next one is, of course, we don't have the names, but the next one says, what was that one viewpoint you staunchly believed in initially, but gradually changed during your blogging years?
Well, a lot of things, actually. So if I look at some of my older posts, I really cringe at some of the things which I said at that point of time. So one of the things that I have, that I think I have evolved a lot on is on the issue of merit and reservation. So I still don't support reservations, but I understand that the word merit is not as black and white as I thought 14 years ago. So I've become more educated on that. I've read, I've become a little more social justice-y, I would say. Because I wasn't aware. I didn't look at the thing from that viewpoint. So I think I've evolved on it. I wouldn't take a kind of black and white approach that I would have taken in 2004 about merit. And then I now realize that merit really is not just a function of how smart you are or how much you have worked. It's also a big function about of your cultural and your family context. Your context in society really plays a big part of what merit is. I was not, again, I should have been aware, but I was not aware of it in that sense that I kind of had this, a person who doesn't do, you know, a person who is, let's say, in joint entrance exam, the guy whose rank is 50 is definitely smarter and deserves more than the guy whose rank is 700. I would have told you that in 2004. Now I'm not so sure. I think that there really can not be any one single metric for merit, that ultimately there's so many things that factor into it that you really cannot say that somebody deserves something much more than, you know, A deserves something much more than B will. You have to consider how A came to that point. You have to consider how B came to that point. That's something which has evolved over the years, I would say. There's other things which have evolved, but I'll just keep the answer brief.
Sure. You've spoken about this a bit, but let me know if you want to go over it. It says, in retrospect, anything you wanted to change about your blog?
So if I said, definitely I wouldn't want to call it Great Bomb. I would have called it something else. Definitely would not have also called it Random Thoughts of Dada Dada, because after that, that template was copied. Everything was blah dada of a dada mind. So I wouldn't have done that. I would have definitely not started hosting my website on a private hosting site. I wish I had gone to WordPress.com like a decade ago. I spent so much money and time on hold with customer support, fighting with them. I wish I could have changed that. But most importantly, I think I would, and I kind of conflicted about that. Maybe I should have been more Vajpayee in my blogs than Modi. I believe that. For my own good, I think it's too late to change it. Number one. And number two, it would kind of be disingenuous to change it, because I'm not like that as a human being also. I do have strong opinions, and just to modulate, and I do that sometimes nowadays, by the way. I do kind of hold back, keeping in mind some of the fallout of freely expressing my opinion. So when you talk about intolerance, it works both ways. Even I feel scared of, and I'm not scared of, you know, Hindu right-wing people coming down and, you know, beating down on my doors. I'm scared of a totally different set of people. But I do hold myself back, and I wish I'd held myself back years before. I would possibly have been in a different state, in a different place right now. That's something which is a larger regret that I have.
Okay. The next question asks, you to name three social media celebs, not regular celebs, you truly admire, and three social media celebs you despise.
So I'll turn it around. There's no way I'm going to answer three social media celebs you despise because of the previous question. So that this is exactly the kind of trap I would have fallen into if this was 2004. I would have started with this. But I don't. It's just not worth it. When we started out, social media was... So let's take a step back. I remember Bill Clinton... somebody asked Bill Clinton about emails, and Bill Clinton said that when he was president, the concept of email first came into being. People started sending emails, and Bill said, I didn't send emails. But many people, they felt that they could write whatever they wanted in emails, because they felt that emails were like in the air, that there was no record of an email. They didn't even understand how technology worked. So it was like a whisper. So they wrote whatever they wanted on emails, and later they regretted it. That's the thing with technology. When we started social media, when blogs started, nobody thought that people would be screenshotting people. Nobody thought that people would become banned. Nobody thought that in, in, like it's happened in Bangladesh, people would die for what they have said in their blogs. People have been arrested for what they have said in blogs. Social media was considered to be this really, really rarefied, esoteric place where you, it's like being with friends. Okay, it's like being with friends in a bar. You can say whatever you want, and they nobody would remember. Okay, so people said things on social media which they would not say in real life. And I think a lot of people regret that. It's the other way around. So everything you say in social media, you are basically speaking in front of a mic. You're basically speaking in front of a television. It's that serious now. In 2004, it wasn't like that. I basically knew everybody at some point of time who read my blog. Everybody knew everybody in India's blogosphere at that point of time. It's not like that. There are celebrities. There are news people. What you say gets, you know, you say something here. Next day, you know, some MP in parliament is taking your name. And you're a part of parliamentary proceedings. That was not the social media I started out on.
So you're not biting this question entirely, including three who you admire?
No, I'm not. Admire part. Okay. So the people I admire, I would say, so he's not a celebrity, but I really admire Dipto Kirti. He was my senior in Jadavpur University. He wrote this amazingly funny article in one of our tech magazines, I remember. And I remember having read that. I didn't know him that well. And I read that and I thought, my goodness, I wish I could write like this. This is so funny and amazingly written. I remember he had a line which said, Xerox, I mean, it's his photocopy, the second greatest labor-saving device ever invented. And in bracket, the greatest labor-saving device ever invented is tomorrow. Thought it was an amazingly, amazingly beautiful written line. So I really admire him. He writes a lot of nonfiction on Bollywood. He writes a lot of list books. He should be way more famous than he is. Honestly, he should be a big time guy. He doesn't promote himself a lot. He should, but I wish the best for him, and I hope he writes more books. And if you're not following Dipto Kirti or not reading his books, then you're missing something. Okay, he is a rare, rare talent. The second social media celebrity I would say is of course, you know, I don't need to endorse him. He needs to endorse me. It's Ramesh Srivats. I think I've watched him grow from, you know, being somebody who nobody knew to being the celebrity that he is. And I think there's very few people who see the thing about Ramesh, which I really admire, is that He writes all these funny tweets. He's a master of brevity, and yet he is kind of inoffensive. I don't think there's any. He doesn't have any enemies. I don't think there's anybody who really dislikes him. I think everybody loves him, and I really admire that about him because it comes back to this theme: is likability impossible in today's day and age? And I think Ramesh kind of bucks that trend. He is very, very likable in every respect. The third social media celebrity, and I'm kind of like, there are just too many to mention at this point of time. But I really like Prem Panikkar. You know, Prem Panikkar and I, you know, go back a long way in the sense that when he was writing for Rediff, which was really the one-stop shop for anybody who was online in the 90s, in the late 90s, like I was, like there was nothing else other than Rediff. And it's shocking to see what happened to Rediff. And Prem used to write on cricket. And I used to love his articles on cricket because we couldn't watch those games. We were sitting in the US. There was no vid, there was no YouTube. There was no like Willow TV in those days. And the thing about Prem was that he could make the games come alive in the way he described it. Like he would describe a dismissal in two paragraphs. And you could see it in your mind's eye, you know, how the dismissal happened. And then I met him. He came to Stony Brook. He was then at New York. And he drove down to Stony Brook. Some students got him. He didn't know me then. I wasn't writing then. So I kind of was a shy guy who stood at the back. And he kind of held forth and talked about Indian cricket. And I was kind of a fan of his. I still read whatever he writes. And I think, even though I don't agree with him perhaps politically, but I still admire him a lot. I think he's one of the pioneers of online writing in the day and age when basically nobody wrote online. He was one of the first I wouldn't use the word social media, but for the first Indian online stars. And for very good reasons.
Yeah, segueing on to the next question in an awkward way. The next one is, considering your roasting of both sides of the aisle, in your opinion, which wing is more tolerant of your views?
Nobody is tolerant. Okay, this whole notion of intolerance and tolerance is a false flag operation. Ultimately, it comes down to human beings, and human beings just, we gravitate to people we like, and we hate people we don't, and when we don't. So this is, you know, if you really look at this is built into our genes. This is a way of survival, right? So this is, you know, this is a basic instinct. So I don't think any side is more tolerant than the others. People will always want to support. They always want confirmation. And in these days of social media where you have distinct echo chambers, it's become even worse. Nobody's willing to listen to somebody else. And the way the social media algorithms are constructed, you don't have to listen to anybody else. These companies give you a nice cocoon in which you can totally surround yourself in. You can read news from the websites you like, totally ignore the ones that you don't like. And so, you know, your biases end up confirming each other. And you create this absolutely different view of the world. As I said in previous podcasts, if you look at today's news, if you go to NDTV and you go to Times Now, you would not believe that they're talking about the exact same incident. It seems they live in two different parallel universes. They're so, so partisan, both of them, in two totally different ways. That the truth is somewhere in the middle, but you wouldn't realize that if you just watched both of them. And I think that's kind of, I've lost friends in a way that I could never believe, losing friends due to politics. I mean, ultimately, this is perhaps the worst way of losing friends, because politicians don't give a F, right? But people do. That's the main thing. People fight about politicians who wouldn't give them a time of day. They're willing to unfriend, they're willing to block, they're willing to abuse friends they have known for years, not online, but in real life, because of whether somebody likes Modi or whether somebody doesn't like Modi. You think Modi cares? No. But we friends, we should care, but we don't. So ultimately, it doesn't matter whether you're right wing or you're left wing. Nobody is tolerant of your view in today's day and age. However, there is a distinction in the way the right wing and the left wing deal with you. So if you end up offending the right wing, you will possibly have a harder time online. You will be set upon. Okay, people will come and they will, you know, they will be on your tail. Your mentions will suddenly swell. You will have a rough time for 2 days. And then they'll move on to somebody else. With liberals, you will not have this. But they will not forget. Okay. They will make sure that you are hounded out of any platform that they control. Okay. So for them, they don't want to engage with you immediately. Okay. They want to show that they're ignoring you. So you'll actually find absolutely no mentions. But then they will try to damage you. Okay. In a very long-term way. And this is, I can speak from my personal experience, having angered both sides, this is usually what happens. The reason why the right wing can't really damage you often in a long-term way is because they don't own many of the platforms. In India, most of the influential platforms are held by people who are on the left wing. So they know that ultimately what we'll do, we'll block you out. Okay. So we'll just block you out and let's see what happens. With right wing, they don't really control that. So they kind of try to drown you out in noise. So again, different ways. I wouldn't say one is better than the other. But I think the virulence is kind of the same in both cases.
Well, I can't believe it's taken us 5 questions to get the first Gunda reference and Gunda question. And boy, what a question this is. So the next one is, and bear with me, it's a little long one. What made you liken the villains in Gunda to the numerous socio-political ills plaguing India during the 1990s. And it goes on to extend this further. Was the political commentary in that article a conscious decision that had been there in your mind right from the outset? Or did that develop as you progressed along the article? There you go.
So let's get the Gunda thing out of the way. A lot of questions are about that post. So the Gunda post is not about Gunda. For those of you who haven't realized it, it's not about Gunda at all. It's about literary and movie criticism. So this was occasioned by, there was used to be a website called Passion for Cinema. And many of the people from Passion, the alum from that blog, have gone on to, you know, bigger things. They have made big movies. But there used to be a lot of passionate discussion about movies. I was kind of a silent lurker there. And I used to see, you know, if they liked a director, they would interpret even the crappiest sequences in a way that made it look like high art. So that was what I really wanted to spoof in this review of Gunda. My main thing was that if you have pre-decided that you are going to like a movie because you feel that it makes you look smart, or you really want to suck up to the director, whatever it is, whatever your motive be, if you decide that you are going to like a movie, nothing in the world can prevent you from liking it or making it look like it is the greatest movie since Citizen Kane. Take Gunda, okay? Pretty much a terrible movie in every sense of the term. It's funny, but it's funny in an unintentional way. It's really the so bad it's good movie. But even that movie, I can take the movie and I can put layers on the movie, which obviously Kantisha did not think of these things. But I can make, if you don't know who Kantisha is, if somebody from, you know, somebody from Germany comes in, watches Gunda and then reads this, you could think maybe this is what the director was trying to go for. And so this is really my critique on literary, and it happens with literary novels all the time. Okay, the whole review of literary novels is as big a sham as the review of movies. That's what Gunda is about. So if you're reading anything else into that Gunda review, everything else is absolutely arbitrary. The only thing that you should remember is that's the way reviews are written when the reviewer wants to suck up to somebody who's made the movie.
Okay. Keeping along similar themes, has Mithunism to you changed over years? Would you differentiate between the man and the idol, and how?
Well, again, Mithun Chakravarty was... you're right. I'm not a huge fan of Mithun Chakravarty, the person. I mean, I like him. I mean, he became a Trinamool MP. I don't know why. So there's always this... the man versus the persona. I always go for the persona. I'm not interested in the man. I'm not interested in how Mithun Chakravarty is as a human being. It's a very dangerous thing to go on. I mean, I'm sure all of us have artists we love. Always take the person out of it. Okay. The person might be horrible. And once you get to know the person, unfortunately, you'll never be able to like anything he's ever done. And you will hate yourself for having actually, and I'm not talking about Mithun, I don't know if he's good or bad. I just have no idea. So for me, again, Mithunism, coming back to what I said, Mithunism is my sign of rebellion. It was a way of me rebelling against, you know, very conservative Bengali upbringing. Conservative as in culturally conservative. And over the years, what's happened is the context of that rebellion is gone, and it just no longer makes any sense to me. So that's why I don't write about Mithun Chakravarty anymore. I mean, when I write about politics, I use some of the metaphors sometimes because, of course, I grew up on that. So that's very much a part of me. So when I start to write, even when I'm writing Sultan of Delhi, I mean, Bollywood is so ingrained into me that I just cannot see beyond it. But I just don't want to make that the focus of my writing or my focus of my thoughts anymore. I would like to believe that I've grown beyond it.
Okay, this one is interesting too. How did you react when Sagarika Ghosh called you a troll on your face? What was your retort?
So first of all, you know, this for the context, I was at Calcutta Meet, and we were both guests there. There was an after meet dinner where, you know, Ms. Ghosh and I, like, we made eye contact, and she, you know, she smiled. I mean, the whole thing was good natured. She came up to me and she's, you know, called me a troll. She's blocked me on Twitter for years, so there's a reason for that. I mean, I didn't say anything to her. All I had done at that point of time was, of course, I was critical of her. That's true. I've been blocked by people. For some people, I've been blocked by. I don't even know why I was blocked. I've never even mentioned them ever, but they've gone and blocked me. But with Chagrika Ghosh, I understand why she would have blocked me. But you know, she came up to me and she called me a troll. You know, she said it in a very good humored way. It was not aggressive in any sense. And I also smiled and, you know, we talked. But of course, I didn't like being called a troll. It's not a particularly nice thing to be called when I haven't trolled her ever. I mean, I have never been abusive. I've never kind of obsessively gone, you know, kept on saying the same thing. I've never done anything which could be constituted to be a trollish behavior. Except I've criticized her. If that's the case, then that's fine. But the point is, these people, on the other hand, feel that they have an exclusive right to criticize Modi and criticize the present government. You can't call them troll then. Then they are, you know, free speech kada koala. But then if somebody does it to them, then they become trolls. I mean, that's really the essence of their hypocrisy. But it's one thing to call somebody a troll on social media, and there's one thing to call somebody a troll on their face when both of you are like, have a plate on your hands and are eating. So, of course, I could have said a gazillion number of things. So those of you who know me know that, you know, I can be caustic on your face. But the fact was, at that point, there were two things. First of all, Chagrika Ghosh is elder to me. I respect her. You know, that's really the way I've been brought up. So if she was somebody who was younger, my age, it would have perhaps been a little different. The second thing is, of course, we were both guests. This was not in a hotel. This was in the person who basically is the kind of the leading light behind Kolkata Lit Fest. It was at her house. So we were both guests. And I felt that any kind of reaction might embarrass my host. So these are the ways I've been brought up. So this is so much a part of me. And, you know, you have only like a millisecond in which to make your retort. Once that moment is over, the moment is over. So while that moment was on, these were all thoughts which were going in my head. And I just went back to eating. I just smiled and, you know, tried to move past that. And this is not something which I regret. I think I did the exact right thing.
You've kind of answered the next question, but let me know if you want to add anything. It asks, do you scrutinize the early entries in your blog from today's prism of appropriateness? This is something I personally struggle from and hence asking.
Yes, I absolutely do. Because, you know, 14 years, the compass has moved. Okay, the compass has moved everywhere. In the US, in India, things have changed. And I would say some for the better, some for the worse. And I would absolutely fess up to being, you know, having my biases. I mean, I'm 42 years old. I grew up at a time when certain things were considered to be acceptable, which are not acceptable. And I understand why they're not acceptable. So I have evolved. I have learned. It's only a particularly ossified form of person who says, I'm exactly the same person at 42 that I was at 28. Okay. And I'm not that person. So I've changed a lot. There's some things which I've said that I particularly, you know, regret having said. I wouldn't say in the callowness of my youth. I wasn't really young when I started writing my blog. I was like 28. But I wish I hadn't said some of those things. I wish, you know, some of the jokes look off color, you know, kind of bad, I would say. Not just, I mean, maybe they might still be funny, but they're just not appropriate, I believe. So I have a lot of stuff that I wish I could go back and erase, but I haven't. I mean, they're still there.
Yeah, I guess even every great work of art ends up having that, right? Right from Mark Twain to even the Disney cartoons.
Yeah, of course. Everybody's a product of their times. I mean, I grew up when certain standards of behavior were considered to be normal. And now I realize that, no, we have evolved, we have progressed. So this is another thing, you know, which people do to celebrities. You know, they take something which they said like 10 years ago, they come and, you know, and they said, well, what about this? Everybody has the right to evolve. Okay. Yes. You can screenshot something which they said like a month ago. and say, but a month ago you were saying this. You can't claim to have evolved within a month, but over the years, you are allowed to go back on certain opinions, absolutely. Because if you're not going back on opinions, then you're a fundamentalist and there's something wrong with you. You've basically stopped learning, or you're... that's a sign of a fundamentalist. A fundamentalist is somebody who's absolutely turned off all external environmental input and only produces output. And I am definitely not that. So I have, my behavior has modified itself. I am not the same person who started out 14 years ago. I don't like the same things. I don't like to talk the same way. And yes, some of the things I said then, I don't stand by them. Embarrassed might be a strong word, but I'm embarrassed by some of the things I've said before too. Yeah, I guess so.
The next one asks, I don't know the context behind this. It says, your encounters with the great Pranab Mukherjee. You once had a post on him on your blog, which is now no more, and I have been dying to read it. Having been subjected to the great man's brilliance, within quotes, throughout my school quizzing days.
So this is, again, his name is Pranab Mukherjee, by the way. It's not Pranab, it's not the president.
Oh, okay.
So he, again, this is... he was a very noted figure in Kolkata quizzing circles when I was in college, and he had this tendency to, at least people say that he had tendency to make questions which were not true. So yes, fake news before the word was coined. And I had this funny post on him a long time ago. And again, this was one of the first things I regretted, and I took it down. Because I felt that he was like, okay, come on, man. I mean, he's a quiz master. He does stuff. You know, it was just too much of an attack on a person who's just trying to do his thing. Right? And it happened once that post kind of became a little viral. You know, I thought, you know what? He's a good guy. I know him. He's a little eccentric in some things, but he's a good guy. I mean, I just don't want... Again, that's the thing with humor, is sometimes the humor gets into a space where it becomes meanness at somebody. And you have to understand, you know, who that person is. If that person is Rajdeep Sardesai, I have no compunction. I'll be as mean as I can. Okay, because that guy is, you know, the kind of power and privilege that that guy has and what he does with it, I think. But there are some other people where, you know what, it's not worth it. You know, it's not worth it with the people. To that person, it's unfair. So I kind of, you know, that's why I removed that post. I don't mention this thing anymore. And that's why I've told a lot of people, you know, where is that post? And I said, boss, I don't do that anymore. So it's somewhere.
No wonder that question didn't make sense to me, because I got the name wrong. I was wondering what the president had to do with quizzing. The next one says, there was a time in 2003-2004 when you would be modestly anxious about reader comments and counts. Have you grown since then? Kudos.
So the fact is, of course, I mean, when you start out, ultimately, why do people write? Why do people produce any content online? They do it for validation. They do it for some kind of validation. And I would be lying to say that I don't care for validation. I mean, that's why I'm asking for, you know, contributions and Patreon. So I don't obsess in the way that I used to about readers' comments, but I do obsess. I wouldn't use the word obsess, but I really do want validation. I mean, I do like to read reviews of my books. I want people to review my books, good or bad, whatever it is. I mean, the greatest enemy to somebody creative is indifference. It's not good or bad, it's indifference when you don't care to even, you know, read or, you know, engage with that person. So for me, the need to be validated hasn't gone down. I don't, you know, use readers or comments counts as metrics for that. But yeah, definitely, you know, I am affected by good reviews, bad reviews. I'm affected by, you know, people, you know, when you try to pitch your books to different production houses, most of the time you face rejection. And I've faced a gazillion more rejections than something else. So yeah, I do think about them. They do affect me. They do affect me psychologically. I think anybody who says that it doesn't is lying. So I don't obsess about it, But please feel free to validate and say good things to me. Please, you know, I really like it.
Okay, the next one is, if you have not got admission in Jadavpur University, and as you have said, you were not eager to pursue economics, what would you have studied?
So if I would have studied, I mean, I don't know really. I would have studied political science. So political science, history, again, I don't know whether I would have been able to make a living out of that. Again, it's different now than it was in 90s in Bengal. I've said this before. You either became an engineer or a doctor, or you joined the party. The party was the CPM party. So it was there was not a lot of choice in those days. But if I was born today, if I was a millennial, and I would have liked to study history or political science. I would have liked to be a lawyer. I think that I would have been the happiest being a lawyer. Of course, that was not a career option in those days. So I never pursued it.
How do you dodge trolls? Does trolling have an effect on you personally or your future posts?
Well, here's the thing about, first of all, I struggle to define the word trolling, but if trolling means negative feedback, if we assume that, then yes, I'm affected by negative feedback. Here's what really pisses me off. Okay. It's not the negative feedback. Okay. People who don't like me, okay, there are two kinds of people. There are some people who don't like me. So no matter what I write, they won't like it. That's one class of people. Then there are some class of people who like me, but there might be certain things about certain books, certain posts, which they're passionately against. That's another kind of negative criticism. And, you know, something else, they'll say good things. So there, but what really, you know, gets my goat is there's this silent majority. Okay, there's this silent majority. There's apparently the silent majority who never say good things. The first time they say something is, I have been a long time, you know, reader of your blog, I've followed, and I think your book sucked. I'm like, dude, this is the first time I'm hearing that you have loved my books and my blogs. You've never said anything to me. That you, not one positive thing over, and you said, I've read your blog since you started, maybe 12 years. So for 12 years, I've never heard of you. And the first time you engage with me is to tell me how much my book sucked. Okay, that gets my goat. Because, and it also gets my goat when there are a lot of people who say, we support you, but we don't engage with you in a positive way. And we don't say that we like your post. Come on, man. I'm writing. The least you can do is say you liked it. If you liked it. Okay. If you don't, then you don't have to say anything. You know, authors, we work on validation. You know, say a good thing. It's not going to hurt you. Okay. Just say nice. Just write one word. Is that too much? Because trust me, the guys who hate me, they are always writing. Okay. They're writing reams and reams. They're trying to, you know, get me kicked out from publishers. They're trying to get me bad reviews in newspapers. They are not resting. So if you like my work, why are you so inactive? That's what gets my goat. It's not the people who are trolling me, but people who like me. They are the ones who I expect more from, if that makes sense.
This question, again, I guess you've spoken about it in the intro. It asks, how have blog audiences changed over 14 years? Have you changed or adjusted any part of your blogging style over the last 14 years?
Yeah, so we discussed this, of course. I mean, there's some topics which I don't write about. I used to compile this list of like worst movies, best movies, so bad it's good movies every year. And this was before I had my daughter and I had a lot of time. So I used to really watch a lot of movies. So, I mean, if you want to choose like the top worst five movies, you have to see like 25 really bad movies, right? Otherwise, it's like five movies you saw, you write for those five movies. I barely see bad movies nowadays. And it was, I remember the time when I made that decision. I was watching Tismar Khan. And somewhere, you know, 45 minutes into the movie, I thought to myself that there's something wrong with me. You know, my blood glucose is going off the scale. I might die anytime. Why am I wasting my life watching this shit? I turned it off, said, I'm not going to watch any movie from now on, which I know from the get-go is going to be bad. there's always going to be things which I'm going to watch expecting it to be good, or saying, okay, let's see how it goes, like a Salman Khan movie. You know, it might be decent. But Tismar Khan, when I started it, I knew it was going to be horrible. Okay, this was absolutely, my expectations were rock bottom, and it met my expectations. So I decided at that point of time that I was not going to waste my life, even a second of my life, watching bad things just so that I could entertain other people by writing about it. There are much better things that I would rather be doing. That's been one of the realizations. I'm more political now, but I think that's because everybody is more political now. That's one thing that's changed. And some people don't like my politics. We don't like you writing about politics. Again, this is me. The blog is me. So as I have changed, the blog has changed. I'm sorry. There's some things in which my opinion has changed. So I blog differently. There's also some language which I believe you can't use nowadays, for good or for bad. So on one hand, I do say that I really don't care what people think about me. But on the other hand, I really do sometimes in some respect. So sometimes I want to say something, but then I say, I guess, you know what, maybe not. So when I used to originally write my blog, I didn't think. You know, thinking was the last thing from, you know, on my mind. It would be like a stream of consciousness. I would come back from work. I would take my cheese fries, I would put it on the side, my fingers would be dripping with cheese, it would get on the mouse, and I would start banging on the keyboard, whatever came to my mind. That model of writing has been gone for many years. Many people say that was my best, many people say that was the time when the blog was the funniest, and that could be true. I accept. But again, that was not sustainable. If that was what I was going to be doing, the blog wouldn't have been here 14 years later. And it happened to many blogs. I mean, how many blogs from 14 years ago still have that same URL? They don't. And perhaps that's the reason why.
I'll read out some from Twitter. Of course, we had the hashtag Talk to Arnab. And thankfully, none of them are for the Goswami one. So this is interesting. Please talk about your writing process, especially about your cellular jail and the one trip.
So first of all, the cellular jail one was written by my mother, by the way. It's prominent on the header. It's written by mother, not written by me. I edited it, of course, because it was written to me. You know, I just, you know, changed some of the stuff so that it read better. For me, my writing thing, especially when I write, so it's very different, and I could talk about this for ages, so I'll just keep it brief. So when you're writing a blog, it's like writing a research paper. So a good blog post, it can't ramble. It needs to make one point and it needs to support that point. If you have two or three points you wish to make, maybe it's good that it's better that you have two or three blogs for it. That's why you'll sometimes see me writing multi-part blog posts. Deconstruction of KHD Wall, part one, part two, part three. Because there are just so many thoughts that it can't be accommodated in one blog post. So a blog post has to have some kind of uniformity of theme. If the theme changes, and so the theme isn't just KHD Wall, but there's something about KHD Wall you want to say, and that should be confined in a blog post. And the trick of writing a good blog post is to start, middle, make your comment, and then end it in a way that kind of ties to the beginning or ties to something which you have said before. Otherwise, it's just discontinuous paragraphs. Writing a book is a totally different. Maybe we'll have another episode if you want to know how I write books. But that's a totally different process. Short of it is, I always start from the back. So I don't write it, but I always know how I'm going to end the book. And then I work backwards. I've never written a book otherwise.
The next couple of questions, I can swear it's not from me. It's there on Twitter. So the first one asks, it seems hardly anyone in India has heard about podcasts in general, unlike in US. Do you think your podcast will be successful? I, of course, enjoyed your podcast.
Well, I don't know if my podcast is going to be successful, but I think it's worth trying. I've been blogging for 14 years, and I think I'm most comfortable writing. I'm not comfortable talking. I said before I have a speech. I used to have, but I still have that speech impediment. I kind of go, I pause. I sometimes struggle for words. So this is me going out of my comfort zone, into going out in a place where I might be ridiculed also. which is why I haven't gone to video, because I'm absolutely sure I'm going to be ridiculed there. So I've kind of gone to a quasi-safe space, and I don't know what the market is for podcasts. Let's see. When I started out, because of bandwidth restrictions, it was not possible to stream audio. The quality of audio would be so bad. They said, you know, if you have only a few megabytes of bandwidth, then of course you're going to spend it on porn. You're not going to listen to podcasts. But now that you basically have unmetered bandwidth, I think India is ready for podcasts. I think there are people who are spending their times in traffic. This is a great thing to do while you're stuck in traffic. This is a great thing to do while you're taking a walk. And the thing about podcasts is you can listen to podcasts while you're pretending to work. You can listen to podcasts while you're doing something else. The problem with text is that it consumes you. This is the only thing you can do at that point of time. So that's why I think that, yeah, there is a scope for podcasts, whether this is the podcast, whether the format is right. Let's see.
Continuing on the same topic, Swadhin asks, what is the topic you are most excited about writing about in a blog? How do you select the medium, whether it's Twitter, book, or a podcast? Or a blog, I might add.
Sure. So for Twitter, it's always, there's so many things I want to talk about. And this is the reason why I started the podcast, because there were so many things I wanted to talk about and I just didn't have the time to put it down in a blog. Because when you write something, you're kind of obligated to edit it. Something which is written has to, I won't say a work of literature, but it has to stand on its own as some kind of literary artifact. In other words, when you write three paragraphs, it takes time. I mean, if you just write three paragraphs, it's going to sound really bad. So blogs take time. There are so many things I want to comment on. If there is some pithy comment I want to make, if there's something immediate I want to make, if it's a thought that happens when I'm watching a cricket game, then of course I go on Twitter. Everybody likes they like the retweets, they like the validation. And it's just, there's this immediacy about Twitter. You don't need to put the context. I mean, when I am live tweeting a game, then everybody knows what the context is. Shikhar Dhawan just got out. So I don't need to explain what the context is. And you're not going to come back 14 years down the line and say, what was Arnab saying here? With the blogs, that's the thing. You have to set it in. You have to write the context for what you're saying. So for non-contextual things, I go on Twitter. For podcasts, it's effectively what I do on the blog. But I can cover more material and I can cover it in a medium which is very different from text. If this is complementary to text. That's the thing. This is not a replacement. And I want to see, I'm kind of see if I have the ability to hold an audience through talking. It's a test for me. I want to see that. And I have had moderate success with text. Let's see how I do with voice.
Okay, we've got the last couple of our within quotes serious questions. I like this one, in fact, which coincidentally is from the winner of last week's What Song Contest. He asks, how did the novel The Mind take shape in terms of references, inspiration, genesis, etc.? It's my favorite book of yours.
So, The Mind deserves a, I can talk about hours on any of my books, really. But The Mind, the thing about Mind is that, many people, of all my books, is the book which most people really, really love. It's also a book which many people absolutely hate. It's very difficult to not have an opinion of The Mind if you've read it. Again, looking back, I wish I had written Mind in a better way. I think it was written in amateurishly. The 2018 Arnab, I kind of look at it and I cringe. This dialogue is so stilted. I wish I'd written the dialogue in a different way. But in terms of the sheer power of the story, it's an extremely powerful story. I mean, this is the book I first wanted to write. I've had this idea for years. When I was in undergrad college, when I was in undergrad, Jadavpur University, that's when I thought of the climax of The Mind. I, of course, had none of the tools to write it down at that point of time. So I decided that one day I would write the story. For me, the thing about The Mind is, so I'm trying to be brief here, is many people consider mine to be, you know, and it's right, it's an extremely gruesome book. It's about as gruesome a book as you can think. Normally in a movie, you can show actual blood. In a book, you're kind of constricted by, you know, what you can do and what you can't. There's no silence. There is no background music. There is no shock of, you know, that door creaking open. You can't do all of that. So you have to be very lurid in your descriptions. And mine, you know, it really goes there. And I've often had this, like, you know, what made you think of all these barbarities? And my answer to this is, well, pretty much everything that's written in mine actually happened in post-independent India. I have taken out the places, I've taken out the names, because I don't want this to be political. But I just wanted to take the politics and the history out of it and show the raw cruelty of what normal human beings, and I'm having my fingers raised in, you know, in inverted commas, what normal people do to normal people in India. So pretty much everything that you've read in the mine happened. None of this is imagination. Of course, I've taken some liberties with the incidents, but the basic things all happened. And that's really one of the unique things about the mine. There's another thing about the mine which I wanted to say. I'm trying not to give away any spoilers, so I'm going to be deliberately vague for those of you who haven't read mine. But I've said this in many of my book events. The mine is actually based on the Mahabharata. It's based on one particular episode of the Mahabharata. And the connection is not there anywhere in the book. And I never expected anyone to make the connection except this one guy who once wrote an email to me and said, "That was the Mahabharata, this thing, wasn't it?" And I was like, yes, one person got it. So that's another thing. If you read the mine, think about what part of Mahabharata it is. And once I've told you Mahabharata, you'll figure out what part it is. Now the analogy will become very clear as to who is what. And that's why also I wanted to write something where the Mahabharata connection was much more explicit, which is why Mahabharata Murders came in. The genesis of it was mine.
And the last of our serious questions is, it asks you, you've been writing for so many years now. Has the process gotten any easier with time?
It has. I'm much more efficient when it comes to writing, especially when it comes to writing fiction. I mean, mine took me almost like 3 years to write. And even then, it's not a particularly well-written book. The only reason why it's still so popular is because of the story. I would really like to rewrite the mine someday. Again, this is another project which I will do perhaps once I retire. I want to take mine and I want to write it the way I would write it today. I would change the Indian characters to international characters because there's really nothing Indian about it. Actually, the one of the problems with having Indian characters is writing the dialogues, because Indian characters, when they speak in English, becomes very artificial, which is why I have a lot of Hindi lines in Sultan of Delhi to kind of counteract that, because people don't normally speak to each other in. So let's say, and I am going to use, you know, I'm not going to use the words because this cannot be an expletive podcast because of, you know, Apple, because I guess we would be banned from iTunes.
Right.
But like, When two people in Delhi are speaking, and if you don't use a BC or an MC or something similar, and if you use F words, okay, or if you use an MF word, it's not the same. Okay, it sounds really hilarious if you have two Delhiites calling each other an MF, but it's absolutely fine if they call it MC. This is really funny, you know, having to, you can't use the words, but that's the thing. So when you're writing dialogues between Indians and they're always speaking in English, I find it extremely difficult to make the dialogues be realistic without putting in Hindi words. It's much easier to have them as a, you know, in British or American, and then let them talk. Like I can write a consistent character from Texas. I can write that in English. He will talk like a Texas, you know, from Texas or from Georgia. I can do that. But I can't do a Bengali guy who who's supposed to be very Bengali, but is talking to another Tamil guy in English. You just can't do it without putting Bengali words in it. So, and these things I did not realize when I wrote The Mine. This was my first fiction novel. I was not even there. But now, having written so many books, having read so many more books, I have a greater handle, a greater ear for dialogue, a greater ear for, you know, how one event leads into another. Another problem with mine is there's a lot of things which I just mention. I don't show it. I just mention it. So The Mine ideally should be about two or three times the length of what it is today. Given that there are five characters, it needed a lot more exposition. And those characters are, again, extremely interesting characters. For those of you who have read The Mine, there is so much about each of them that I just mention in two sentences where I should have devoted chapters to establishing those character traits. I believe I do this much better nowadays than I used to when I was writing Mine. With respect to nonfiction, I don't think stylistically I've changed much. Again, the topics I cover, the words I use, yes, those things have changed.
Okay, now we'll move on to the fun questions. And what we're going to do is we're going to do it Karan Johar style. We'll make it rapid fire. I'll shoot out the questions. Some of them are, of course, questions which you don't know about. And let's have quick answers. All right, Arnab. So here's the rapid fire round. You won't be getting a gift hamper though, but here goes. Who are the closest counterparts in Indian politics for your favorite Gunda characters?
Okay, so the thing about this is one day I'll write a blog post on this. It's very difficult, first of all, given that Gunda have kind of shifted from my mind space, suggestion taken, we'll write a blog post on this someday.
Okay, most wannabe trends you find on social media?
Most wannabe trends, of course, people checking in to first class lounges of airports and thinking that I'm interested in knowing about that.
The recent most so bad it's good movie you have watched?
I've actually forgotten the name of this movie, but it was, and I'm having a senior moment at this because of the rapid fire nature of it. But this movie, and this was a sex education movie made in Hindi, which was actually started off with a thanks to Atal Bihari Vajpayee.
Oh man.
And yeah. So this was apparently, I didn't know about this movie. I was going to review it on my blog. I'd actually, when I saw this movie, it was like just before I moved here. And then in the move, I totally forgot about that movie, but it was hilarious. Okay. I think it's on YouTube. I got to know of it from this Facebook group that I'm a member of. I love trashy movies. I had never heard of this movie before. Somebody had posted a clip. And it was amazing, that clip. And I thought, okay, even though I don't like B-grade movies anymore, but this one I have to see. And oh my God, it was just amazing. I'll write about it someday once I have to see it again.
If you find it, of course, we'll also link to it on the show notes. If you had to cast one of your books, unlimited budget, what would it be?
Cast one. So I think the most cinematic book that I have is Sultan of Delhi. If I had an unlimited budget, if it was a movie, then I would have Ranbir Kapoor playing, you know, Arjun Bhatia. It's a perfect guy. If I had a limited budget, there's a guy called Pulkit Samrat. Him.
Right. Okay. Dark Knight or Logan?
Logan. I mean, Dark Knight is a great movie. But for me, and as I become older and become more obsessed with the process of aging and what it entails and mortality, I don't think there is a popular movie which kind of captures what it is to grow old and to realize your mortality better than Logan. It's just, if you haven't seen it, it is not just a Wolverine movie. It's a movie about death, but it's a Marvel movie also. But it's not. It's very different from the mainstream Marvel movies. You see, this is kind of like an off Marvel. But I mean, I don't think Marvel Studios makes it. I don't think that they have the rights to the X-Men franchise. They think they sold it and they didn't get it back, which is why they don't record in the Marvel Universe. But this is, Logan is an unbelievable movie. It possibly will never be as popular as The Dark Knight, but I think as it's better than The Dark Knight in many ways.
Who is the closest Sridevi replacement we have now, if Chalbaz or Lambehe were remade?
Closest? I don't even know who's like... Katy Perry. Katy Perry actually does a mean Sridevi impression. I mean, if you look at her, whether she does it consciously or unconsciously, I don't know, but she does some of those expressions to the camera. I've seen that. If you look at California Girls, there's a lot of places where she does like old Sridevi stuff. So the answer is Katy Perry.
Would Modi be looked back semi-fondly by media like Atal?
Yes, he would be. Once the Chief Minister of Uttar Pradesh becomes the Prime Minister of India.
Okay. Cities you wish had IPL teams and teams you wish didn't exist?
Teams that I did... Okay, that's a good question. So, no, I think Kings 11 Punjab, I think that team, there is nothing going for that team. I think that team should be disbanded. I think there should be definite... There should definitely be a Pune team. I think Pune, unfortunately, they put a team and then they take it out. I think Pune deserves better. And they should bring back Pune Warriors. They should bring back Pune Warriors. They should bring back everything about that franchise. It was one of my favorite. Yes, and they should bring back Kochi Tuskers too. So I think those franchises deserve to come back. I don't know why they just remove those franchises. But again, I like Kings 11 Punjab. I love Preeti Zinta. But in terms of all the franchises, I think it is the weakest franchise in terms of brand loyalty, in terms of performance. I mean, Bangalore comes close, but still, it's Kings 11 Punjab.
I personally like the previous Kochi team's name, Kochi Commandos, before they became Tuskers. Should Priyanka change her last name to Priyanka Jonas? Man.
No, man. Of course not. It should be Priyanka Chopra Jonas.
I don't know the Jonas guy's first name, but maybe even he can take up Chopra.
He can be Madan Chopra for all.
I don't know how you're going to do the next one as a rapid fire, but why do you consider your PhD as a mistake?
That was a non-serious question. this is a topic for another show. Because it'll take a long time to explain.
You want
to
park it?
I'll say it in two lines. That's fine. The thing is, there is a PhD is for a very specific a successful PhD is for a very specific type of a person with a very specific financial situation with a very specific number of parameters of success in his life, and I'm not that person.
Okay, will T20 ever catch on in the States? T10.
I don't think that Americans have any more bandwidth for yet another sport for national obsession. I mean, even soccer soccer's big in the US, but it's never really caught on ever. I mean, US has a fairly decent soccer team, but it's not something which is in the popular consciousness in the way basketball and baseball and football are. So even ice hockey, I would say, not that much, but still. So I think that pretty much the sporting, the spectrum of American sports is been fixed. I don't think there's any other sport which can come in. Of course, I mean, Indians will perhaps gravitate towards T20, but it's never going to be bigger than, you know, even the CPL nowadays has a few games in Florida. I think that's going to be the limit.
Does your family read your blog? And if I can add to this question. Do they listen to your podcast too?
Yes. My father and my mother obsessively follow my Twitter feed because my father is concerned who I've pissed off. They have one way of knowing that, you know, their son is alive. if they don't see me tweeting for a few days, they get worried whether, you know, what's happening to me. So my parents have always been, you know, huge, huge supporters of my blog. Not always because they have, I mean, my mother agrees with whatever I write, but that's because she's my mother. But my father doesn't agree with most of what I write, but you know, for the podcast, my father's regular feedback has been, you sound much more balanced on your podcast than you do when you write, which really comes to my father's real pet peeve, that I'm very partisan. He would want me to be more like Vajpayee.
Which book of yours would you want your daughter to read first? This one's from me.
Of course, Yatrik. I mean, Yatrik was... Okay, so Yatrik was a book which I wrote for my daughter. So I wrote Yatrik when my daughter was going to be born. So it was the first book which is actually dedicated to my daughter. Everything before me, two books were dedicated to my parents. So I'm always, you know, this science might sound overtly sentimental, but I'm always scared that I'm going to die. That I might die tomorrow. So and I know that there's always a possibility when I, you know, when I drive out that I might not return. And so Yatrik is based on that. It's based on that very real fear that I have and what happens after that. So it's a book which is written for my daughter. It's a book which I would like my daughter and all daughters and sons to read, because it kind of crystallizes what I believe is true about life. It's a very different kind of book. Many people are disappointed when they read. I've seen many reviews on Goodreads, which is, I can't believe that Arnab Ray, a guy I admire so much, wrote this crappy book. Even Chetan Bhagat would be ashamed to have written, would be ashamed of having written this book. I don't know why they feel that. I mean, there are also many people who feel that it is my best work and nothing that I've written ever comes close to Yatrik. Yeah. I think it's, I mean, I don't know whether it's particularly well written. Maybe it could have been a little bit well written, but I think in terms of what I was trying to say, I think it's fairly profound. I think it's fairly new what I was trying to say. And it's definitely perhaps the only book that I would not only want my daughter to read, but I would be absolutely fine if that is the only book that I've written that she reads. I would rather not want her to read my other books.
Okay, do you ever watch dubbed South Indian movies? They are the closest to 90s Hindi movies, or have you outgrown that phase? I guess you have answered this though.
I have outgrown the phase, and I used to watch them in the 90s, when I used to watch pretty much everything, like on Sunday at 3 o'clock, our local cable wala, there used to be a video channel, right, where they would show the illegal videos. So it would be at 3 o'clock every Sunday. So whatever they would play. So they had these Telugu movies. I remember it was dubbed. The name of it was Super Police. So yeah, I used to watch it. You know, yeah, Venkatesh, or possibly Venkatesh. And the good thing about those movies was that their violence was a little bit more realistic. In the sense that in Hindi movies, you normally wouldn't see blood. I mean, there would be Dishum, but nobody bled in Hindi movies. But in those dubbed movies, you could see that there was a little bit more of, I mean, the action was a little bit more real. I mean, nowadays with Anurag Kashyap, of course, for you millennials, you don't know what I'm talking about. But if you look at old Amitabh Bachchan movies, when people fly across and they break like matkas and they break carts, but nobody really bleeds.
And you actually had human Dishum sounds, not in some of those B-grade ones.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I guess that kind of wraps it up. I wish I had a gift hamper like we have in the coffee show to give out to you. But for now, I think I can just ask you to read out your Twitter handle and your blog and sign off for now.
So my Twitter handle is @greatbong on Twitter. My blog is greatbong.net, and I'm on Facebook as The Great Bong. So I have a page on Facebook. So, and of course, you have my podcast.
And of course, I'm on Twitter at The Vikram Mohan, and the network is on as at Talking Stuff Net. We also have the Talking Tech podcast, which you can find in all the podcast players of your choice, as well as on the site. And this podcast is now available on pretty much every platform around, including SoundCloud, iTunes, Google, YouTube. We're not yet on Orkut or Friendstar or Hi-Fi or MySpace or Desi Baba, but we'll get there, I guess. That's pretty much it. It's been a really big episode. So any passing thoughts?
These are two episodes together, right? So just to get the numbers correct. So I think if you split it into two episodes, so don't consume this episode altogether. Split it up. And of course, let us know how you liked it. I hope this forms the basis of a conversation, because I've replied to many of your questions. I apologize if I missed any of your questions. We will have these kinds of open questions always, and you can always free to ask questions about my blog. So if I haven't been able to cover anything, if you want to ask follow-ups, please do so. The talk to Arnab hashtag is always open.
Well, I guess that's the best way to sign off. And happy birthday to the blog. And see you next week.